Packers have signed a free agent, agreeing to a deal with safety Kyle Sabetic, a Wisconsin native. We'll break down Sabetic's signing before welcoming ESPN NFL Nation reporter Kevin Seifert onto the show. It's all coming up on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We have an interview coming up at 9 o'clock a.m. Central Time with ESPN NFL Nation reporter Kevin Seifert. If you're listening to the podcasted version of the show, that just means that it'll be about a half hour in where we have to talk to Kevin Seifert. I know normally my guests appear at the top of the show. Kevin couldn't make it here at 8:30 a.m. when this records live. So we're just waiting a while, but that's all right. We got some stuff to talk about in the meantime on this March Madness edition of Railbird Central. That's the title of today's show. And how about the March Madness that took place last night, Thursday evening, out in Los Angeles? Some Sweet 16 action. The Wisconsin Badgers beat. they win in NCAA basketball action last night. And Aaron Rodgers is in the house to see the Badgers advance to the Elite Eight. So very exciting for Wisconsin to beat North Carolina, the Tar Heels, on Thursday evening. And several Packers connections, actually. If you watched the broadcast on television on, what was it last night? I think it was on TNT, right? You saw probably several times the camera panning to Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers in the audience with his girlfriend, actress Olivia Munn. You probably couldn't miss it because they probably showed him, five times in the audience over the course of the broadcast. But nothing new for Aaron Rodgers. If you remember last year during the NCAA basketball tournament, he was also in attendance in these rounds. He went to both the Sweet 16 game and the Elite Eight game where they qualified for the Final Four last year and got a little bit of attention for that. I remember he was actually in the Badgers locker room after the game cheering on the in-state Wisconsin team. And Badgers coming away with the victory. The other Packers connections, if you're watching, of course, the television broadcast, you may have recognizing the voice calling the game, the doing play-by-play, Kevin Harlan. That is the son of Bob Harlan, the current chairman emeritus on the Packers board of directors, but also their former president. Not only is that the connection, but Kevin Harlan is also the Packers preseason television announcer when games are televised during the exhibition season. That is Kevin Harlan, unless they're slated for national broadcast, but he does kind of the local or regional broadcast during preseason play along with Rich Gannon that are just on the Packers TV network. And then if you didn't watch on TV, if you were listening to the radio broadcast of the game, you may have heard Wayne Larrivee, the voice of the Green Bay Packers, there, the Packers radio network play-by-play announcer. So lots of Packers connections there to the Sweet 16 game last night, aside from it just the team being from the state of Wisconsin. But, of course, I'm a Wisconsin Badgers alum, and very important to me personally. Was an exciting game. The Badgers down. They were probably down the majority of the game. Certainly not the whole game, and they pulled away at the end a little bit. I wouldn't say pulled away, but you know they got a nice two-score lead on the Tar Heels toward the end of the game, making a late push. But this certainly is an exciting team to watch. You don't have to worry when this team gets behind. I mean, if we're going back to last season, you'll remember the 2014 NCAA basketball tournament. The Badgers get down by like 14 points to Oregon. I'm talking last year. You know, they get down by double digits. It's like halftime. And you know, last year, I was worried at the time, like, oh man, this does not look good. And they come back, you know, with the big second half last year and win. Just a, you know, little over a week ago, the Badgers get down in the Big Ten championship game to Michigan State. And I believe that, you know, that deficit got to double digits. And Badgers come back and win. The amount they, you know, were down last night to North Carolina never did reach double digits, but you know, what was it up to at one point? Maybe 7 points. North Carolina led by at one point, but and you know, held that lead for quite a stretch at least. You know, they for like I said, the majority of the game, North Carolina had the lead, but you know, the Badgers with I don't know, you know, 7-8 minutes remaining, started to make the push, eventually took the lead, and just held on as time ran out. Exciting game last night, and it'll be fun to watch. I mean, probably maybe the best matchup of the entire Elite Eight round coming up. It happens to be out in L.A. when the Badgers take on Arizona. That's probably the best matchup among Elite Eight games. I'm not talking about, you know, in the future, Final Four. Yeah, those will be good too. But as far as the Elite Eight goes, Badgers and Arizona Wildcats coming up tomorrow, Saturday, somewhere around 5 p.m. Central Time, I believe the game takes place. So excited for that. But enough basketball here. This is a Packers talk show. There were several Packers connections, which is why I'm talking about. But now it's time for
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, since our last episode of Railbird Central on Wednesday, I believe this news actually broke later Wednesday after we went off air, but the Packers signing safety Kyle Sabetic, who is actually a Wisconsin native, played his high school football for Kenosha Tremper, went out of state for his college football, actually played at the University of Dayton, which is at the FCS level. So wasn't, you know, the big time college football, but still, FCS used to be called Division I AA. So still kind of a Division I type of player. It's not like he was, you know, Division III or anything like that. But where the Packers really, I don't want to say discovered him, but the impetus for signing Kyle Sabetic was that he was a participant at the league's inaugural Veterans Combine held this past Sunday, kind of in conjunction with the NFL owners' meetings that were held in Arizona. Those are now done, but just the NFL owners meeting started on Sunday. They wanted to hold him at the same place where, you know, coaches, personnel people, decision makers were all kind of from the whole entire league were kind of there at the same time. So it made sense to have this workout. And I know just yesterday at ESPN.com, reporter Rob Domofsky interviewed Kyle Sabetic, and who said he ran in the 4.4 second range for the 40-yard dash. Of course, it's kind of like just like the typical college combine. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same where they do all those drills, but a lot of the same things. And that's rather impressive because, you know, in doing some research when the Packers signed Kyle Sabetic, went through his pro day workouts prior to coming out for the NFL draft last year. He wasn't drafted, but he entered the NFL last year. Yeah, so to give a little bit of background on him, you know, he graduated from Dayton or exhausted his college eligibility. I don't know whether he technically graduated or not. Sometimes college football players, you know, don't. I don't want to say Kyle Sabetic did or didn't, but I just haven't dug into him that far to know that. But anyway, you know, at his pro day workout, published at least at NFLDraftScout.com, where they, you know, do a good job of, you know, putting together results from pretty much every prospect that takes part in a pro day. Sometimes these times are, you know, certainly aren't as reliable as those that take place at the NFL Combine, but it's said, you know, again, NFLDraftScout.com, the source here, ran in the 4.5 second range in the 40-yard dash. So actually, if, you know, all the things being reported here are accurate, Kyle Sabetic actually becoming faster, I mean, it seems like that 4.4 range, it's kind of like that's the agreed upon just because of its, you know, 4.4. Kind of the agreed upon fast range. If you can run a 4.4, you're considered fast, and that apparently that's what he did. So even more impressive than that, last year, again, 2014 Pro Day, his alleged three cone drill time was a he was clocked in 6.69 seconds, which is really fast for that drill. The three-cone drill, also known as the L drill, kind of three cones placed in the shape of the letter L, and they kind of run back and forth. What that's an indication of is your change of direction skills, kind of like in football when all of a sudden, you know, you got to plant your foot and go in another direction. They want to see how fast you can do that. He was really good in that. If I'm just kind of going off the top of my head by remembering looking this stuff up, that would have been the second fastest time of any defensive back. We're talking corner, safeties, anything here. Among defensive backs at this year's NFL Combine, would have been the fourth fastest, or tied for the fourth fastest at last year's NFL Combine among defensive backs. So really kind of impressive there, these change of direction skills he apparently has. And you can see this is probably why the Packers were drawn to him. Again, going further back here during his college career, Kyle Sabetic led the nation, or led the FCS division of college football, with 15 pass breakups as a junior, which seemed to be statistically his best season. I believe he had three interceptions that year, 15 pass breakups. So rather impressive. Again, you can see why the Packers, you know, want to take a look at him. And I kind of personally, you know, I know in announcing this signing on the blog here at Cheesehead TV, and then, you know, it goes to auto post on Twitter, and, you know, somebody responds with, you know, Packers signed Kyle Sabetic, and somebody responds with who, you know, like it's expected, like they should only sign big names or something like that. You have to understand, and if, I mean, certainly if you're new to football or whatever, I mean, this is the time of year, here we are in March, where, yeah, free agency's open and you can sign big name players, albeit by now most of them are off the market. But, I mean, rosters are now at 90, off-season rosters, before, you know, shrinking to 53 during the regular season. As long as you're not giving any guaranteed money to these guys, and street free agents don't get guaranteed money, you know, or at least a very, very tiny signing bonus sometimes, there's no hurt in doing this. It, you know, Kyle Sabetic is not expected to be a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro. He's probably not even expected to be a starter in Green Bay. Sure, they would take those things if they would happen to happen. But I mean, you're just looking for somebody that can hopefully make your 53-man roster. You're hoping that there's a solid backup here that impresses you, that does better than expected, that hopefully can provide some special teams value to the Packers. I mean, that's what you're expecting out of a signing like this. If you're mad that the Packers went out and signed some no-name safety, well, you know, get real. You know, get realistic. I don't think he's going to make the roster myself. But again, there's no hurt in taking a guy that, you know, apparently is pretty fast, that has some potential, taking a look at him and seeing what you have. I mean, you sign him now in March, so you get him in the month of April, and he's part of the whole entire offseason program. He can learn the schemes and systems, so, you know, by the time training camp starts, there's not a lot of learning taking place. I mean, obviously, there still is, but, you know, at least he's got the basics down and can just go out and play for the most part. That's what you hope. For Kyle Sabetic, he was a cornerback in college. I admit, I mean, I've never watched him play, or at least never really. If I happened to catch a New York Giants game in the preseason last year, unwittingly watched him at least. So he comes out of college where he was a 4-year starter at cornerback. And then joins the NFL, signs as an undrafted free agent with the New York Giants, and switches to safety. Played safety last year during the preseason. He played in 4 preseason games. Only 2 of them, according to ProFootballFocus.com, did he actually see action on defense, so otherwise playing special teams. But, looking at being more of a safety, and from what I've seen, he's 6 foot, and you're just under six. It's interesting. He was actually listed as 5'11" with the Giants. The Packers list him as being 6 foot. And what they do in the NFL is they never want to use fractions. So if in the NFL, you see it all the time with the combine and things like that. If a guy measures in, with a half an inch, they round up. So who knows if the Giants just measured him a fraction under 5'11 and a half, you list him at 5'11, and the new person who took the new measurement, if he's 5'11 and a half and they round up anyway. Packers, it looks like he was listed at the NFL's veteran combine as being a safety. It's nice that, he would have a little bit of positional flexibility, in terms of, if you're around for the regular season, you get down to 53 players and all of a sudden you suffer an injury or two during a game and then you need an emergency replacement. Kind of nice that, he's got the ability to do that, maybe more so than some other people, and that 4.4 speed sure seems nice. The jury's still out on him. Speed isn't everything, but something he can hang his hat on, at least. You would think that he's coming in, Kyle Sabetic, and probably competing with a guy like Chris Banjo for a roster spot, who was a reserve safety last year, played a lot of special teams, and that's going to be Kyle Sabetic's key to making the roster, is special teams. I know nothing about what he's done in the past, what he did for the Giants in that role on that unit, but we'll see. I said before the show on Twitter, I said, throw out a percentage on the likelihood that you think Kyle Sabetic will make the roster. And here's some of the responses that I've gotten. Some a little more tongue-in-cheek than in others, all the way from, let's see, Cody Bauer on Twitter and Daniel Benavides on Twitter. They say 0%. Daniel throws in the caveat, unless someone gets injured. Some other responses, kind of mid-range responses here from Kevin Lamb on Twitter, says 5%. Tex Western, one of our former Railbird Central guests here on the show, says 8%. And then kind of some of the more higher range here guesses from Sean Mulemans on Twitter and Mark Wellner. They both say 20%, which is the highest range we've gotten. So anywhere from 0% to 20% chance of Kyle Sabetic making the roster. There were more guesses in between here that I'm not going to list them all of everything I received on Twitter. If I were to say, I guess I would put my guess somewhere around 10%, a 1 in 10 chance that Kyle Sabetic actually, you know, ends up on the regular season roster of the players. And to those people just, you know, saying 0%, you know, had I asked this question when Chris Banjo was signed, you know, think back 2 years ago when the Packers signed Chris Banjo in the midst of training camp. He wasn't around for the very beginning even. They sign him. It's a few days into training camp. If I would have put out the same question, I probably would have said somewhere in the same range, like 5, 10% that he makes the team, and he does. He does. I mean, may have taken an injury or something to happen to help out those chances a little bit. But still, I mean, I would have known going in at the time he was signed, you know, what the situation was and what the odds were. And, he ends up making the team. And again, by no means is Chris Banjo like this stud Pro Bowler. But that wasn't the question. It was just whether he makes the roster. So again, I mean, I put Kyle Sabetic's chances, at a long shot at 5 to 10%. There's always a chance for anybody to make the team. Other Packers news. Jordy Nelson. All these items coming out of the NFL owners meeting. Again, I can't cite just one reporter because there was a whole... You know, most of these items, I think, came from interviews with head coach Mike McCarthy or either Packers president Mark Murphy at the NFL owners meetings, in which there's several reporters around them. So it's not like anybody, you know, breaking the news here, any one person. But Jordy Nelson having hip surgery, apparently just a cleanup. He was having some issues with his hip after the Pro Bowl or maybe even before the Pro Bowl, but just wanted to take care of it. It's apparently nothing serious. Like I said, just a cleanup, or that's the word from reporters coming out of the NFL owners meetings here. I don't think this is anything to be worried about. It's on his hip, not on his knee. So it's not related to the surgery he had in 2013 on his knee, which was not, you know, a huge deal either in terms of, like, you know, tearing a ligament or anything like that. But something to keep note on here. I think McCarthy ended up citing, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that. Assuming this took place shortly after the Pro Bowl, it's very likely that Jordy Nelson will be ready for the start of the offseason program that kind of starts in late April, shortly before the NFL draft. He'll probably be ready by then. And you would think he would want to be, because Jordy Nelson has something like his bonuses add up to $500,000 over the next few years by simply taking part in the team's off-season workout program. Now that's simply based on attendance. So even if he was hurt, but he was there, at least he would still get the bonus money, you know, as long as he's rehabbing and things like that. Just notable there that Jordy Nelson had surgery on his hip after the Packers season. Elsewhere, Packers team president Mark Murphy acknowledges the team will unveil new throwback jerseys in 2015. I think it was rather inevitable here. In fact, threw out a blog post a couple, you know, months ago that the Nike was already kind of hinting that the Packers would, have a new third alternate jersey this season. There, you have to keep an alternate jersey for like 5 years. I think the term is, like, you can't have a new throwback jersey every year. Just league rules kind of stipulate that. you know, I'm sure they have their reasons in terms of that. Maybe they want to generate interest and generate sales. And if you're just doing one new one every year, interest doesn't build perhaps as much as it could. But if you, but if you're using it year after year, as the Packers have done, and they don't use it a lot, they've been using it, what, one game a season. But if you do it, you know, consistently year after year, people start recognizing that. And there's been no word on what exact version or year that they're going to do. But the word is they are definitely doing it. And so it'll be interesting when they unveil that. And no firm word for when they'll unveil it either, just that it will happen here in time for the 2015 season. I'm sure it'll be big news when the news ends up breaking about the alternate jerseys. And finally here, Darrell Revis says he was in talks with the Green Bay Packers in free agency. He had some interview, I believe, on a cable station in New York. Of course, he signed with the New York Jets, so it makes sense that he was talking to a station that focuses on the New York market. But Darrell Revis saying the Packers were in the mix or in talks with them. Now, how exactly, how serious the talks were, simply, I have no clue. But I mean, it was remarkable from the point that Darrell Revis threw out, you know, kind of mentioned like five teams he was in talks with, and for the Packers to be among them was kind of interesting. And you know, when you think about it in light that the Packers kind of saw the writing on the wall at the time that, you know, Devon House and Tremont Williams might be gone. You know, Darrell Revis ended up signing on the first day of free agency. So, you know, keep in mind that Devon House and Tremont Williams hadn't left yet. But Packers, like I said, probably saw the writing on the wall and saw that it was likely that they would move on and maybe they would consider them. And, you know, it could have certainly been a situation where the Packers are like, hey, just keep us in mind. You know, they probably weren't going to throw out the type of money the New York Jets. Well, obviously, they weren't throwing out the money the New York Jets did to Darrell Revis. But would have certainly considered signing him. When you got a talented player like that, you don't mind, you know, having your comp pick perhaps nixed. If you could, you know, get a guy like that under a reasonable contract, and Packers at least kicked the tires, did their due diligence, whatever, but just kind of notable that that happened. But anyway, here, we are nearing the 9 o'clock hour here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. What we're going to do is take a break here. I'm going to get Kevin Seifert, ESPN Nation reporter, on the phone here. And so just hang with me here. We'll be back shortly with Kevin Seifert here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central. Welcome back to Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central here on a Friday morning. Joining us on the phone right now, we have ESPN NFL Nation reporter Kevin Seifert joining us. Mr. Seifert, how you doing?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
Very good. We're glad you could join us. Now, Mr. Seifert, this is a show dedicated specifically to the Packers, and you had a pretty close connection to the team for a while as the former NFC North blogger at ESPN.com. Do you still feel a connection to the NFC North teams more than maybe some of the other divisions in the NFL?
I do. You know, it's only been 2 years since the blog ended, and you know, a lot of the players that are on these teams and to some extent the coaches are people that I covered doing that. So you you tend to be certainly more familiar with them, more familiar with their background and what their plans are and their intent. And, you know, I still live in Minnesota, so I hear plenty about the Vikings. And as you know, I'm sure there's a lot more Packers fans in Minnesota than most people nationally realize. So get a fair amount of Packers interaction as well. So it still sort of feels like at least, you know, I'm certainly still living in the NFC North area for sure.
So speaking of the North and Minnesota and Wisconsin, I know you've been following the Adrian Peterson story pretty closely lately. What's the latest on AP and the Vikings, and where do things go from here?
Well, you know, at the owners' meetings this week in Phoenix, Ben Dogra, the Peterson's agent, sort of turned up the needle a little bit on the public rhetoric and said that he didn't think it was in Adrian Peterson's best interest to be in Minnesota. And there's been this underlying sort of understanding that Peterson was potentially looking for a new place to play, but nobody had said as much on the record, and now that's sort of out there. But in talking to the Vikings people, you know, on and off the record, and just kind of watching how they've gone about things, they really don't want to trade him. They're not, you know, their public stance has been he's under contract. We have no intent to trade him, which is sort of similar to what they said about Percy Harvin a couple of years ago before they turned around and traded him. But in this instance, I really think that they're being genuine in their desire. They want to keep him. They want him to honor the 3 years he has on his contract. They think they have a potential playoff team with him, you know, put him in the backfield with Teddy Bridgewater, quarterback, and Mike Zimmer coaching the defense, and they really like what they have put together. And, you know, this is a franchise in the past 10 years that's been to the playoffs 3 times. They missed it 4 of the past 5, and, you know, they don't want to start over. They don't want to give up an asset for what would probably be a fire sale price, given his age and position and the way other teams sort of view that market. And they don't want to give him up. They want to use him. They want to try to benefit from not only from having him under contract, but having, you know, paid him basically his full salary last year to stay on the sideline.
We'll continue to monitor the situation. Other news coming out of the NFL owners' meetings. You were there, and I read one of your recently published articles about the keynote speech from a professor about the NFL needing to show some humility. And as part of that article, you shared some perspective from Packers president Mark Murphy. So can you kind of share the gist of this keynote speech given to NFL owners and then Murphy's reaction to it?
Yeah, it was by David Brooks, who's also a New York Times columnist, and you can see him on a lot of the political shows on Sunday morning. And he's writing a book about humility and teaches a course at Yale about humility as well. And he sort of feels like Americans have you know, essentially gotten too full of themselves and think they're a lot more important than they are. And when you think you are important and you think you know everything and you think you have all the answers, you're not likely to listen to outside suggestions or ways to improve yourself. And so, you know, the NFL always has somebody come in and give sort of a message at the beginning of their owners' meeting. So 1 year was Condoleezza Rice, and there's been other people as well. But from what Mark Murphy said on the record and some other people said, sort of just speaking on background, was that this was sort of a different tone and a different message. And he basically said, was telling the owners, you know, you guys obviously have a great business. You're making money hand over fist. But as evidenced in the things that happened to within the league and outside the league and to the league and were caused by the league in the past year, it's pretty obvious that you need some lessons in humility and that you need to understand that if you become this, you know, this insulated power structure that thinks it has all the answers because it's making a lot of money, then that's how you can get in trouble. And I think that applied to some of the issues of the league faced, and I think most of the people there it resonated for. You know, if you think you've got it all figured out on domestic violence, that's what makes you ripe for a real big mistake, like they made in the case of Ray Rice. You know, they as it turns out, they knew nothing about domestic violence and the issues that were involved in it, and that's how he, through sort of a shoddy investigation, got slapped with a 2-game suspension. They thought that was it, and then only later found out there's a lot more to that story and to the issue at large as well. And so, you know, you could probably certainly be cynical and say a bunch of billionaires, you know, they might listen to the message, they might nod their head, say you're right, we should acknowledge the things we don't know, you know, be more humble, not be as arrogant. But, you know, I guess time will tell if it actually has any real impact, if it changes the way they go about things. But I just thought it was interesting that somebody in authority, I assume Roger Goodell in the league, decided that would be a good message to start off. And it's apparently a course throughout the meetings as well. Is let's focus on some things that we don't know. Let's focus on what people who aren't familiar with football might be able to bring to the league and thoughts and that sort of thing. So it was an interesting tone and message, I thought. I'll see if it has any impact, but it at least indicates a small degree of recognition from the league that there's things they could certainly do better.
We're talking to ESPN NFL Nation reporter Kevin Seifert here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Friday morning, staying in line with the connection to Mark Murphy here because he's part of the league's competition committee, talking about the rule change proposals at the NFL owners meeting. I know the rule on extra points and 2-point conversions have been tabled until May, but is there one solid proposal with precise language they're considering? Because I've heard lots of suggestions about what they should do or could do.
There is not yet. And basically what happened was the only thing that they had sort of on in writing on paper was I think it was the Patriots idea to move the extra point to the 15-yard line if you kick it to the 15-yard line, or you could still have a 2-point conversion from the two. The Colts withdrew the crazy extra point where you could be rewarded for going to two by kicking a 50-yard extra point after that, and you could end up having a 9-point play after touchdown. That one got removed, and that was fun to talk about, but it was never seriously considered. But throughout all the discussion and all the debate, by the end of the meetings, they got to a point where they felt strongly that something needs to change for this season. And because they had the Patriots proposal, but they also had a lot of other suggestions, they decided to tell the competition committee to take all the suggestions that were given in the next 30 days, figuring out what's the most, the best and probably most organic change and recommend that, and then they would vote on it at the May meetings. And in talking to people and just listening to Rich McKay, the co-chairman of the committee, talk, it sounds like one really likely suggestion is sort of a 3-prong change. They would move the yard line from the 2 to either the 1.5 or the 1, which would, that'd be for kicks or for 2-point conversions, which they hope would incentivize coaches to go for 2 more often. And obviously that's a more exciting play than a kick. And then on the flip side, if there's any sort of block kick or if there's a fumble on a 2-point play, you'd make it a true football play and allow the defense to try to recover it. And if they do, they could potentially return it for a 2-point score. And, instead of it just being whistled dead as soon as they touch the ball. And so that's sort of the framework of what they're likely, from what we've heard, going to come up with. We'll see if that is in fact what they do and if the owners approve it in May. But it sounds like there's a fair degree of momentum to change it at least a little bit to provide more incentive to make it more of a football and less of an automatic kick.
Yeah, it makes sense to me to just move it to the 1.5 or 1 all the time, because it seems like if you have that option to move it to the 15, like you know automatically it's a kick, or if they're at the 1.5, you'd know it would be a 1 point. There's kind of no, chance that there could do a fake extra point at all,
You wouldn't want to do a fake extra point from the 15 unless you thought you had a lockdown, hole in the defense. And I always hate fake field goals nowadays and fake kicks as well, because, if you're the Packers, do you want Aaron Rodgers on the field trying to help you score 2 points, or do you want it to be, Mason Crosby and Tim Nasty? And so nothing against those guys, but obviously you'd rather football, your best offensive players on the field when you're trying to get 2 points.
To wrap up here, kind of one last question. As far as the rule proposals related to instant replay go, only one passed. Is this the league hesitant to make the game longer? Is that the rationale?
There's that, because they made some progress in making the game shorter last year, so they don't want to make it longer. There's also sort of a lot of the competition committee guys have been there for a long time, and that's a very powerful voice they have collectively. And the original intent of instant replay was not to replace the judgment of officials and not to replace, the officials themselves. They wanted there just to be a small slice of obvious situations where officials could be supplemented by instant replay. And I think there seems to be a philosophical hesitance to get over that hurdle where you're now essentially making them the replay an eighth official and giving the replay people the opportunity to overturn any sort of call. And I think there's a lot of people, coaches and other people, maybe Dean Blandino, the officiating chief as well, that you have this technology, we're showing it to the viewers at home, they're seeing it with their own eyes, and yet we're not allowing our officials to make use of that as well. And so there's certainly a sort of a philosophical push going on, but we saw what won out, and that was the old school competition committee understanding that they only want a small slice of games to be impacted by replay at this point. And until they get over that hurdle from a philosophical standpoint, I don't know that there'll be a whole lot of changes.
Yeah, makes sense to me that they would add the one on the goal lines and end zone lines, but apparently that's...
I think that's going to happen eventually. Honestly, I think what they're waiting on is to figure out a way to get a marketing, to get that paid for by a camera company or whoever wants to buy a sponsorship for that. I mean, they have those tablets they have on the sidelines that allow them to look at pictures. Microsoft sponsored that. I think it's like a $400 million sponsorship that the NFL gets over the course of the contract to give Microsoft the opportunity to provide them with free tablets and administration and support. So you get $400 million for those tablets. I imagine they could get lots of money to go to the Canon goal line angle view on the broadcast or whatever it is. So I'd imagine, I don't know how much it would cost them to do it themselves, but I'm sure they don't want to when they know they can probably make many multiples of that in a sponsorship if they just took their time and put it out to bid.
Pulling back the curtain here on the NFL, but Mr. Seifert, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight and keep up the good work.
Okay, Brian, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Kevin Seifert, NFL Nation reporter, joining us here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Interesting to talk about all the rule changes and the NFL owners meetings with him, but glad to have him join us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well. And we wrap up with
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers here on this Friday. Just briefly, because I think it's always honorable when Packers players do this, but linebacker Sam Barrington is helping to raise funds tonight for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Wood and Clark Counties in the state of Wisconsin. They're actually holding a fundraiser tonight at the Rose Bowl Lanes in Marshfield, Wisconsin, so kind of the central part of the state. If you happen to live in the area, go check it out. Some bowling fundraiser. You bowl, there's raffles, things like that, and you get a chance to meet Sam Barrington. So cool that he's taking some time out of his schedule in the off season to volunteer to do that. So that's really cool. But perhaps more football oriented here on a Friday, the Pro Day schedule. Events today being held at TCU, Texas Christian, LSU, Louisiana State, and Brigham Young, among a few other smaller schools that are holding them as well. But I think the most interesting one of the day is at TCU, where everybody's attention will be on linebacker Paul Dawson. He, of course, being one of the more highly rated inside linebackers, which, of course, the Packers need. And why Dawson is of interest in particular is that he had such a poor performance at the NFL Combine. Ended up his 40-yard dash was ran in 4.9-some-odd seconds. He had a very poor vertical and broad jump, which really raised questions about his dedication to the game. There were already some kind of off-the-field concerns in terms of he admitted to being late to meetings. He tested positive for a prescription drug. Those things maybe could be overcome, but now you add this on top of it and you just wonder, is football the priority for Paul Dawson, or is he not really so interested and still going to cause trouble and things like that? And it's tough to tell at this point because he's so talented on film. Just if you watch his film and that's the only thing you're basing your rankings on, he would be the number one inside linebacker, I think, ahead of Eric Kendricks. Again, just based on film, just based upon what he's shown in games. But you got all these questions about him, and I don't know, maybe he rededicated himself. It's kind of nice for him, actually, I think, in that there's kind of been, you know, throughout the whole month of March is kind of when pro day workouts take place for the most part. There are some in April and things like that, and who knows, maybe there's even some toward the end of February. But the NFL Combine was kind of in mid to late February. What were the dates there? Right around the 20th or so, I believe. And it's now been more than a month since that time. So it's been a month long opportunity for Paul Dawson to kind of, you know, maybe get a little bit better in shape, show a little bit better conditioning, perhaps, you know, get a little faster 40 time, a little bit better on the jumps. That would ease teams' concerns. I know if I was a general manager, a decision maker, it would, you know, give me a little bit of peace of mind to see him show some improvement here and just show some, a little bit better work ethic, perhaps, towards what could be a future career in the NFL. So we'll see what Paul Dawson does today. I'm interested to see how fast he runs, how high he jumps, things like that. Not that it's the be-all, end-all, you know, decider of where he goes in the NFL draft. But I've said before, I'm not sure, you know, you can invest a first round draft pick into him just because there's so many question marks. That's what gives me the edge with a guy like Eric Kendricks is, you know, maybe slightly less of a player. And I don't think it's even, you know, it's not like the gap was huge to begin with. But the fact that he's already a good player, plus a very good leader, he's incredibly smart, and less off the field concerns. That's what gives Eric Kendricks the edge to me in terms of just ranking inside linebackers. But Paul Dawson has an opportunity today to get back into the conversation with the number one mix here, whatever, however you want to describe it. But that'll do it for today's show here at Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much for joining us here on a Friday morning, as we do every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. The live edition of the show podcasted later in the day. My call to action, give Kevin Seifert a follow on Twitter. It's Seifert NFL. But on top of that, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It helps us get the word out about the show and helps us gain more of a following. So we have no subscription rate, no paywall here at Cheesehead TV. One small thing you can do for us in addition to buying our NFL draft guide, which, by the way, we are running out of time. I should have talked about this earlier. I believe Monday or Tuesday is the last day to get your pre-order. So if you want to get a discount on our NFL draft guide, do so soon because it goes out Tuesday. Goes out to the public, release then. At that point, there will no longer be a discount. It goes up to regular price. So just head to our homepage, click on the, you can't miss it, click the widget there. that goes to our store, and you can pre-order our NFL Draft Guide Pro Football Draft Preview. Anyway, we'll see you later, folks. On behalf of everybody here at Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Kirvu. I leave you today with a song called All Inside by Kyle Hollingsworth on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go, Pack, go.